All right, welcome back, y'all. Another episode of Technical Knockout, the Hardcore Casual MMA Podcast. I'm your host, Hussein. With us is a special guest here, Bloodsport MMA. Say what's up.
What's up, you guys?
He's back, baby. We're bringing him in to discuss UFC 300. It's a very stacked card, so it always helps to have another insightful mind in the MMA community join us. So let's get right into it, because there's a lot to talk about with this card. Do you want to start at the top, or you want to go work our way from the bottom up? What do you think?
Bottom up's better. Let's save the best for last, right?
Yeah, I like that. Let's do that. All right, cool. So we'll start off with Davison Figueiredo versus Cody Garbrandt. This is a pretty, I think everybody's expecting the same thing in this matchup. I think a lot of
interesting.
People...
Interesting. Well, okay, now I'm curious to hear what you mean, because I'm not sure if I expect the same as everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think on paper, we're looking at, you know, Cody Garbrandt, who is very far removed from the title, has had a really rough last couple of years. He is coming off of a victory, though, over Brian Kelleher, who is obviously not at the same level as somebody like Davison Figueiredo. Davison Figueiredo, on the other hand, you know, was fighting for that flyweight belt over and over and over against Brandon Moreno, and came up to bantamweight and beat Rob Font in a pretty decisive victory. And now he's taking on Cody Garbrandt. So battle of two former champions. Who do you think, Bloodsport?
I have to be honest. I'm going to go with Cody.
Really? Just,
okay, I might be a little bit biased because I really like Cody and I'm not the biggest fan of Davison. But anyways, Davison is 36 years old. At bantamweight, at such a light division, age plays a big factor because speed is the first thing to go once you get older, right? And
true.
Speed is one of the most important things. The smaller the division gets, the more important speed gets. So for bantamweight, speed is so crucial. Cody was always famous for being extremely fast, and he still is. And I believe, yeah, Cody had a setback, but it's not like Cody's a journeyman that has never fought anybody significant.
Yeah.
Cody, in my opinion, still has, together with Conor against Alvarez and probably now Sugar against Cheeto, one of the most dominant performances, or not dominant, one of the most beautiful performances ever in championship history against Dominic Cruz. I mean, if Cody hits his flow state, you are not beating Cody. And I believe that his last two wins were really good for his mental. He had a lot of mental struggles in the past, especially with his injuries and everything. He talked about this a lot with his wife leaving him and all those problems.
Mm-hmm.
He's on a 2-5 winning streak, mentally in a very good space, lives in Vegas now, trains at the PI full-time, 32 years old. I like everything about it. He has amazing wrestling. Davison probably has jiu-jitsu edge, but I don't think he will tap Garbrandt.
Yeah.
Garbrandt has the faster hands. Like, I like Garbrandt a lot here, and I got him by decision.
By decision, okay. I was going to say, because... You know, I think he's fought like a pretty good style for where his career's been going these last couple fights, where he's pretty elusive. You know, he mm-hmm. stays on the outside against Trevin Jones, uses jab, uses speed, like you mentioned. I'll be honest, the speed isn't something that I really took into a factor in this fight. Figueiredo is certainly a slower fighter, but he's also coming up from flyweight, so he's used to fighting even faster guys, right? Like guys like Brandon Moreno, guys like, you know... I don't know, the list goes on, all the flyweights that he's fought over the years. So
the question is Brandon Moreno really faster than Cody Garbrandt?
I don't know. I mean, Garbrandt is lightning fast, you're right. And, you know, he's fast by bantamweight standards, so I'm sure he'd keep up with a lot of those flyweights.
Mm-hmm.
But what really concerns me is Garbrandt's chin. You know, obviously
yeah.
it's something that's been troubling him through the years. You know, it seems like when he fights a smart fight and he doesn't get hit, he can, you know, rack up points on guys like Trevin Jones, or, you know, Brian Kelleher. He was winning before the knockout. But if he does get touched, he kind of goes into that I see red mode. And that's not something that you want to do against somebody who's such a sharp counterpuncher like, Davison Figueiredo, you know. I think Figueiredo's gonna stalk him down. I think Garbrandt's gonna, if Garbrandt fights this fight smart and he stays on the outside and he circles and mixes in the wrestling, I could see him having a lot of success. But if, you know, if he takes one and tries to give one back, I can see Figueiredo really punishing him And I do think the power edge is on Figueiredo's side, even if he's coming up a weight class. So I'm going to go with Figueiredo here. I don't know if he's going to get it done by knockout or by decision, but I just see him landing the more impactful strikes over the fight. And I think Garbrandt might be winning like 3-4 minutes of the round and then get dropped at the end of the round and have his, you know, confidence shattered, and might not be able to come back from that kind of that knockdown. So we're split on the pick. It's going to be an interesting fight.
That makes it more interesting if we're split. So.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, and I mean, with the betting odds so steep here, I think they have Garbrandt at like plus 230. So, I mean, you know, it's a good bet if you're confident in him. I definitely recommend taking that, you know, because I do think that the fight is a lot more close than people think. I just feel like the power is going to be the edge. And in this, like, day and age where they judge the fight so hard on, you know, damage and power strikes, I think Figueiredo is going to be able to get that decision when it goes there. But all right, let's keep going up the card because there's a lot more to talk about. We got Bobby Green versus Jim Miller. What do you think?
I think this is a fight that is really hard to predict because there's so many factors that play into the way this fight goes. I mean, Jim Miller, in my opinion, is the more, how should I say, fundamental fighter. He's more well-rounded, even though Bobby Green is a good wrestler. He has good grappling, he's a mid-Tony Ferguson, whatever.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
And Jim Miller has... Yeah, it's just very technical. I love his combinations. It's like... He always throws like 3-punch combinations, finishing with a leg kick. Always. I love that. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know how effective his style is against a guy like Bobby Green. Because Bobby Green has amazing range management. Is lightning fast for the age of 37. He's much faster than Jim Miller. Mm-hmm. And... He normally does not lose a fight if his opponent is not faster than him, or at least as fast, and like really dynamic. And Jim Miller is not dynamic. Jim Miller is, you can see that he's 40. He has power. Mm-hmm. He could put Bobby out. He could also submit him. But I just think he's too slow, too static for Bobby Green. I think Bobby Green will just kind of dance around him, hit him with good shots, and... win by decision.
Yeah, I think there's a fight I've been going back and forth on myself. Jim Miller's from Jersey, so I'm very biased, so it's hard for me to not put my bias aside. I love Jim Miller. I've been watching him since I, you know, first got into the sport. I've seen him live a couple times too, which was awesome.
That's cool.
But yeah, no, he's great. Super exciting fighter, and you know, if you look at his record, you see that like he'll get these like quick finishes, you know, these first round finishes. But a lot of times those fights are against people who, you know, not to disrespect them, but really don't belong in there against Jim Miller. You know, guys like Alex White, guys like, I forget the people's names. You know what I mean? Guys making their UFC debut or it's their second fight. Jesse Butler, you know, Nicholas Mota, Eric Gonzalez, etc. Like, these are guys that if they do end up in the UFC, end up going like 0-2 or something like that and then getting cut. When Miller goes up against a veteran, he tends to have a little bit more trouble there. In his last fight, he did well against Gabriel Benitez. So that, you know, that might be the exception to the rule. And that fight was kind of an exception to a lot of rules in Jim Miller's career. Like I said, a lot of his victories come in that first round. And typically, if he doesn't get the kill in the first round, he kind of gasses out or slows down. In that last fight, he showed a new wrinkle to his game where he was able to keep that dominance up for 3 rounds until getting the finish late in the fight. But that being said, this is a whole different matchup. I think Bobby Green is somebody that really, you know, finds his reads and, you know, like reads the opponent. As the fight goes on, he gets stronger. You know, there's often times where Bobby Green will go 3 rounds with somebody because he's very tough. He takes a really good punch, Bobby Green. And in that third round, he'll win. You know, I remember the Rafael Fiziev fight, who, you know, Fiziev was like, he still is a very bright prospect in the lightweight division and a very scary striker. And Bobby Green took those punches and kicks for the first 2 rounds and then won the third round on cardio and toughness, you know. So I could see something like that happening here. If Miller can't get the early finish, I think Bobby Green can definitely drown him as the fight goes on. But, and it's a big but, Bobby Green got knocked out bad like 4 months ago, right? Yeah, twice. Yeah, it was bad. Like, he got dropped and then he got punched on the ground like, you know, really horribly. And that was only in December of last year. So that's, you know, 4 months. I'd imagine that he took a month or two off of, you know, training and hard sparring, I hope, after that knockout. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, he might be coming in here on, like, 8 weeks' notice, you know? And against Jim Miller, who also hits really hard and, like we said, is a very fast starter, he might be able to get – he might catch Bobby Green, you know, cold in the first couple minutes of the fight. And if he does, I expect him to – you know, like you said, he can knock him out or he can submit him. I expect him to drop Green and catch him in some kind of submission or, you know, just punch him and Bobby Green be so affected from that brutal knockout not too long ago that, you know, the ref is forced to stop the fight. That's what I hope as a Jim Miller fan. I hope that that's what goes down. But my mind is really telling me that Green is too fast. He's too slick. And anything that Jim Miller is going to show him is something he's already seen. And I expect Bobby Green to probably win this fight as the fight goes on. Probably by decision, if not by a late finish.
I just looked it up. It's way more than 8 weeks' notice, though. The fight was announced in somewhere early January. So definitely a lot more than 8 weeks' notice for him.
Yeah.
4 months.
So, I mean, if he started training right there in January, 1 month after getting knocked out like that, like... I don't know, man.
You can train like a few weeks after you get knocked out, no problem. You just shouldn't spar.
Shouldn't take those punches. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but training doesn't need to be sparring. You know.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You can spar the last, and you don't start your training camp in January anyway. Like the training camp normally starts like 2.5 months maybe before the fight at most. Less.
There's had
normally.
Some time to think about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely, like it's not like he just comes off that knockout and like hasn't been able to train or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely plays a factor. Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I'm worried about him, you know, because if somebody like Volkanovski, who's you know the best fighter in the sport up until recently, can have his chin be so affected by a brutal knockout a few months ago, you know, somebody like Bobby Green, who's 38, or how like we said, or 37 or 38, you know, will likely have that kind of detriment too. You know, I can't really remember Bobby getting knocked out like that before. You know, the only time I can remember him getting knocked out was against Dustin Poirier.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
I think it was featherweight, right? I believe.
Yeah.
No, it was in lightweight. It was like
Poirier's.
Yeah, it was like one of Poirier's first fights at lightweight.
Oh, okay.
And looking at his record, he came back. He took a year off after that fight, after that knockout. So, I mean, this is a pretty close comeback here. So, I'm a little concerned. But, you know, it wasn't that long ago that Bobby Green knocked out Grant Dawson when everybody thought he was going to lose that fight. So, you know, he certainly has that dog in him. And I'm excited for this fight. You know, I think this is a great matchup between two veterans. And I'm really happy that they got this spot on UFC 300 to give some shine to those guys. Plus, it's Jim Miller's, you know, he fought on UFC 100, 200, and now he's fighting on UFC 300. That's a great storyline. I love that. So if he can get dub, he'd win in all those spots. And I think that'd be an awesome story. But, you know, I'm hoping Jim Miller wins. I think Bobby Green's going to win, though. All right.
Okay.
We'll move up. We got the first women's fight of the night. And it's one between two very brutal and violent women in Jessica Andrade and Marina Rodriguez. This is a pretty interesting matchup at women's strawweight. I think the dynamic between the fight is that Marina Rodriguez is very fundamentally strong. She throws a good 1-2. She throws a good knee up the middle, a good left hook. Very, you know, fast on her feet. And Andrade, on the other hand, is a bit of a wild woman. She'll come in winging those hooks, try to get to the single leg and slam you on your head, and then do horrible work from the top where, you know, she just has brutal ground and pound. but Andrade has kind of been on a back and forth skid these last couple of years. She's only lost to really good fighters in Yan Xiaonan, Aaron Blanchfield, and Tatiana Suarez. So no shame in losing to those women. And, you know, she has that victory over Amanda Lemos. She has that most recent victory over Mackenzie Dern, where she beat the shit out of Mackenzie Dern. And Rodriguez is, in my opinion, kind of slowing down these last couple of years. Where, you know, obviously we were just talking about Andrade has had some struggles, but she's still putting in those victories. She's still, you know, beating the shit out of people that she's supposed to beat the shit out of, like Mackenzie Dern or like Lauren Murphy. And Rodriguez, I don't know, it just seems like she's lost a bit of a step as far as the speed and athleticism goes, but she is the much more technically strong fighter. What do you think, Bloodsport? Who do you got in this one?
This fight is what I call a pee break, my friend. I mean, I have no idea who in the office of the UFC had the idea, hey, let's put Jessica Andrade versus Marina Rodriguez on the biggest fight card in history. Like, come on. I mean, Kayla Harrison, Holly Holm, I like it. Cool fight. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Wei Li against Yan Shuanan, cool fight. I'm looking
That's
forward
a great fight.
But this card should not have Jessica Andrade versus Marina Rodriguez. With all due respect to the former champion, Jessica Andrade. I mean, I will, like, if, and on this fight, if I will, like, if I have anything to do in terms of food or prepare food or whatever to eat after that, I will do that during that fight for sure. I mean,
that's
but,
fair.
But, yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of women's MMA overall, and this fight is just, in my opinion, horrible. But Jessica Andrade can be very entertaining, I have to say. I watched her in Brazil live when she beat the living life out of Murphy.
Yeah, oh my god.
And when I met her in the elevator, she was really cute. She looks, I felt like she looks cuter in real life than in the pictures. But
she's got
anyway,
a great smile.
Yeah, but I would not advise you to Google her OnlyFans. Because,
no, that's all right. We don't have to do that.
I saw some Reddit pictures once, and I'm still traumatized. But anyway.
Yeah, no, I know exactly. It's burned into my memory. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, back to the topic. Marina Rodriguez has an amazing record for a women's fighter. I mean, 17-3 is a, for a women's MMA fighter, is a outstanding record. But I just think in this fight, Andrade is probably the faster girl at 32. Also with her style, she was never like a slow striker or whatever. Marina Rodriguez, 36, for someone that weighs 116 pounds, that, as I said, plays a difference, or could be a difference. And Marina Rodriguez is very good, but she has kind of problems, as far as I think, with the style of that smaller girl who comes at you with a ferocious pace and tries to take your head off. Look at
like
her fight
Amanda
against
Lemos.
Amanda Lemos.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly.
Whilst Andrade, and she also hasn't faced that many girls who fight like that, and Andrade has faced so many girls like Rodriguez in the past. She may have lost to one or two, but it doesn't matter. That's experience. And yeah, I just like Andrade in that fight. Be honest, and I would not be surprised if she gets her out of there. So if I would have to pick a method, I would go Andrade KO round 3.
I like it. You know, I think I really feel like this fight can go either way. I think it really depends on the early goings. If Rodriguez is able to use her footwork and use her jab and stay on the outside and frustrate Andrade and force Andrade into wading in with her, you know, big hooks and kind of recklessness that she showed against, like, Yan Xiaonan, where she threw, like, 3 left hooks in a row. I was like, come on, girl. Like, what are we doing? Like, you know, like, I know that that's her money punch, you know? She's hurt a lot of women with it, but I was really happy to see her go back to a more reserved style and let the fight come to her against Mackenzie Dern. If Andrade can do that in this fight, wait for her shots instead of trying to force it, I think she's going to have great success against Rodriguez. I thought that that Amanda Lemos fight was a bit of an early stoppage when I was watching it live.
Auto stoppage.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, that being said, she did face a lot of problems with the pressure of Lemos, and Lemos put her in the position to get the ref to stop it. So I think Andrade is going to have some success with her pressure. She just needs to be smart with it, you know? Think, like, fight like, I mean, I'm not going to tell her to fight like RDA because it's a very different style, but, you know, RDA has that kind of, like, I'm pressuring you, but I'm staying defensively sound, and it puts a lot of, you know, for lack of a better term, it puts a lot of pressure on the other fighter to not make a mistake. And if they do make a mistake, somebody like RDA or Andrade, when she's pressuring smart, can really capitalize off of that. So I like Andrade in the fight as well. I'm going to go by decision, though. I think she might rack up some minutes of control time in this fight if she can get that pile driver takedown that she loves and just kind of put Rodriguez on in positions that she doesn't want to be in and get the victory that way. You know, now that I'm, you know, and once I mentioned that, I just remembered how, how bad Marina Rodriguez's defensive wrestling really is. In that Verna Jandiroba fight, she was taken down over and over and over. So if Andrade can do the wrestling game plan, she'll have great success, I think. So I am going to go with Andrade here. We'll see how it plays out, though. All right, so next fight. This
time
is,
to move the fuck on from the fight.
Yeah, yeah. do you want to preview this one, Bloodsport? This is a pretty interesting matchup here.
This is a very interesting matchup, and I have two ways, like, well, of course, it's MMA fight, it could go anyway.
Yeah.
But I really think there is a world where Moicano fights the way he fought Dober, holds him down, like holds Turner down as much as possible for the entirety of three rounds and wins the decision. I do believe there's a world where that happens. I just think that Chalin Turner is so dangerous and so hard to get to with his long reach. I mean, he has a huge reach. He's way too big for that weight class. I still have no clue how he makes that weight. And Moicano has a lot of problems in the striking on the defensive side. Moicano gets hit, Moicano gets hurt, Moicano can get knocked out. Even against Dober, he got rocked a couple of times. Bad. He was just lucky he could grab a hold of him and take him down. And I just don't know if he can hold Turner down and take him down by choice like he did Dober. Because Turner is not a fool on the ground, right? And I think if I have to make a prediction, I think Turner's power, Turner's beautiful striking, his knees, his kicks, will get Moicano out of there. He's not Drew Dober who will take a hat kick like that. Dan Hooker who will take a hat kick like that.
Yeah.
I think he will put Moicano out in round number two. If I will have to go into details, I would say hat kick.
I like it. I like it a lot. I agree. You know, I think there's a world where Moicano is able to take some punishment and get to the hips of Turner and, you know, put him in places he doesn't want to be in on the ground. There's a world where Moicano can snap up Turner's neck in a scramble. I do feel like Moicano's lost a lot these last few years. A lot of speed, a lot of athleticism, and more than anything, his durability is really in question. He was well on his way to losing that Dober fight, you know? He lost the second round, and then the third round, it looked like he was getting beat up. And then Dober went for one of the most ill-advised takedowns that you can ever see, the lateral drop. To his credit, he did get the lateral drop in the second round, so I understood, like, hey, if I can do it once, I can do it again, right? But at the same vein, if you get caught with it once, I'm not going to get caught with it again. And Moicano took advantage of that position and was able to stay on top for the rest of the fight. I don't see Turner making that mistake. I don't see Turner going for a takedown on Moicano at any point in this fight. I think if Turner gets him hurt, he's going to finish him. And I think he's going to do it either with his punches or with the kicks, like you said, because he has all those tools. He really is one of those guys that embodies the art of eight limbs, you know? We've seen him get knockouts with elbows. We've seen him get knockouts with his knees. We've seen him, you know, punch people into the dirt like Bobby Green. We've seen him kick people in the head like Dan Hooker. And I just don't think Moicano's durability is going to hold up under the power of those strikes from Chalin Turner. And furthermore, you know, Moicano is frequently the larger man in his fights. You know, obviously when he was at featherweight, more so than anything, but now up at lightweight, he's still a lot bigger than these guys. That's not going to be the case here. Like you said, Turner's huge for lightweight. You know, we saw him go up to welterweight that one time against Vicente Luque and get smoked. So I think he does belong at lightweight. The welterweight weight class is a big jump, that 15 pounds. You know, if there was a 65 division, I think Turner would run it. But yeah, I'm going to go with Turner by knockout here. First or second round, I'm not sure. You know, I feel like the second that he catches Moicano, he's not going to let up and he's going to get the finish shortly after. So I'm going with Turner by finish here, or by knockout rather. All right, going to the prelims card. Diego Lopez versus Sadiq Youssef. This is a very interesting fight and one that I'm really not sure is going to play out. Do you have any insight here, Bloodsport?
I always have the insight. it's a very tough fight, 100%. It will be very interesting to see Diego Lopez, how he performs against Youssef. But what I just feel like is not a real argument is it's a big step up in competition. Because don't forget, Diego Lopez made his UFC debut fighting Mofsar Evloev, and he gave Evloev a run for his money. Like, I have no idea how Evloev survived that armbar, I think it was, and he had a second submission that was pretty deep. Like, he was really good in that fight, and Evloev, we know how good he is. He just beat Arnold Allen, who, by the way, if we go to MMA math, beat Sadiq Youssef, you know what I mean? And people will say, yeah, but Sadiq Youssef has the UFC experience. He fought in UFC much more, blah, blah, blah. That's true. He definitely had... He has more experience against those big names in the UFC, 100%. Diego Lopez made his MMA debut, I think, in 2013, at the age of, like, 17.
Mm-hmm.
Diego Lopez is fighting since a long time. He has... this will be his 30th fight under his belt. While Sidiq Yusuf, this will be his 16th fight. So Diego Lopez will not have a problem with the experience, in my opinion. Not at all. His striking is really coming together. He looks phenomenal on the feet. His grappling is second to none. And I do believe he will take Yusuf out because he does not go to decisions too often. So I think Diego Lopez will rock him, will knock him down and jump on his submission and submit Sadiq Yusuf in round number 2.
I agree completely. That was going to be my pick, was Lopez by submission round 2. I think it's going to be... I don't expect Lopez to get a grappling game plan going. I expect him to catch Sadiq with a punch or a knee or something, some strange strike in an exchange, and Sadiq to get hurt, and Lopez to either snap up a guillotine or jump on his back. Lopez is great when he takes the back. He's Alexa Grasso's BJJ coach, who we know has phenomenal jiu-jitsu from that position. You know, you saw it in effect against, you know, the women's flyweight GOAT and Valentina Shevchenko.
I would love to do some BJJ with Alexa Grasso, man.
I'll tell you that much. but, you know, both of their styles, Grasso and Lopez, you can see the influence there where they're very opportunistic, you know? Any chance that you give Grasso, any chance that you give Lopez, they're going to take it, you know? And Yusuf is a very smart fighter, but he's been hurt in fights before. We saw him get tagged a couple times against Arnold Allen. We saw him famously get, you know, rocked several times against Edson Barboza, which was an insane fight. If you guys haven't seen that fight, please go back and watch it. It was an amazing comeback from Barboza. Yusuf starts off the fight very strong, and so does Lopez. So I expect this fight to be very action-packed the whole time. And I think Lopez is going to find Yusuf's chin at some point and be able to snap him up in some kind of submission. You brought up a very interesting point with the experience being that, you know, Lopez has the 30 fights versus Yusuf's 16. Yusuf hasn't been super active, even though he's been in the UFC longer. I think he's been fighting like once a year, maybe twice a year. He's had some injuries and stuff too. So, excuse me, I do think that this is Diego Lopez's time, and I think he's going to get the finish on Saturday. All right.
Nice, nice. Now the most exciting women's fight, in my opinion, of the evening.
What are you thinking? What are you thinking on this one, Bloodsport?
It's such a tough one. It all comes down to the weight cut. Because if this fight happens at 145, definitely almost 55, Kayla Harrison gets the win. She's younger, much younger. She's 10 years younger. Yeah, 9 years in a few months. Let's say 10 years younger. She has all the accolades in the world. Of course, Holly Holm also was a former UFC champion, boxing, Hall of Famer, whatever. But still, Kayla Harrison wins that fight if... she is in a healthy spot, but I just don't. I can't wrap my head around how she's gonna make 135.
I don't know.
How much muscle did she lose in that camp? Because you don't lose that much muscle if you train every day. So how much? And if you look at the picture of her when she made 145, she was as jacked as it gets. Where should she take another extra 10 pounds off? We saw it with Cody Garber when he went down to 125. We saw it with Dan Hooker when he went down to 135.
145, yeah, it was bad.
No, 130. Sorry, 145. Yeah, of course. Against Arnold. Yeah, 135 would be a little bit hard.
It was
against
rough.
Arnold Allen. Like, it takes a tear on you. Like, your chin will not, if she even makes the weight, if she misses the weight, she wins. But Kayla Harrison is the ultimate professional. I can't see her make the weight, but at the same time, I can't see her just miss the weight. Because she's the ultimate professional, she would rather die probably than not make the weight.
Yeah.
So for me, what interests me the most, the real fight for me is Kayla against the scale. That's the real fight for me. I really want to see how she's going to look on Friday. But as I said, I just go with the possibility, with the hypothetical thing that she will have a lot of problems on the scale, she will drain this, whatever, and it will affect her in the fight, and my pick is pretty spicy. I just made that up right now. Holly Holm knocks her out in round number 2. Because of the brain fluids that are missing from Kayla and whatever, and Holly Holm has good boxing, and sorry that I go so long, but Holly Holm normally does, recently at least, go with the grappling a lot, but if she has two brain cells, she will not try to grapple Kayla Harrison, so she will use her boxing, and you can ask Ronda Rousey, she has some power, so we shall see.
I'm on the same boat as you, man. I think that this weight cut is going to be brutal for Kayla Harrison, and like you said, she's such a professional, I don't expect her to ask for a catch weight or to miss the weight. I think she's going to kill herself to make 135. She's going to have to cut off one of her huge lats to make 135. And I don't think that that's great against Holly Holm, who, you know, Holly Holm has had some trouble these last couple of years. Sure, she's, you know, she's old, like we said, but she's been old for like 20 years. So it's like, you know, I can't. Like,
20 years ago, she was 22.
Enough. Yeah. But I just feel like the whole time she's been in the UFC, the narrative going into the fight is like, you know, she's old, but she's still in top athletic performance. Kayla Harrison as well is a great athlete, of course, but she just lost to Larissa Pacheco, like, what was that, like less than a year ago? And Larissa Pacheco, I would pick Holly Holm against her 9 times out of 10, you know?
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, the difference is, too, is that, like you said, Holly Holm is a good grappler in her own right. And if Kayla Harrison is not able to get that finish, like she was not able to do against bums in the PFL, she wasn't able to get the submission against bums in the PFL. So I think she's going to have to fight a longer fight. With that weight cut, I expect her to, if she's not going to get chin, she's going to get tired. And Holm is a strong grappler. Mm. We saw her beat Chris Cyborg in clinch positions. You know what I mean? She won the parts of the fight that she won against Cyborg, who's one of the strongest and most powerful female fighters of all time, was in the clinch with her strength, with her wrestling. So I think Holm is going to have a lot more success than people think, and I'm very excited to put some money on it, because they have her like plus 350. It's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, plus 3. True, that's I just thought it out. Plus 340. That's an interesting point.
So I'm going to take home here. I don't know if she's going to get it done by decision as Kayla Harrison gasses out, or if she's going to knock her out in the second or third round, but I expect her to win the late part of the fight by a big margin. Probably going to find a finish at some point, but if not, I think she's just going to win minutes and minutes of the fight while Kayla Harrison looks exhausted. And, you know, if this fight was at 45 or at a catchweight of 150 or something like that, I'd pick Kayla Harrison 9 times out of 10. But I just can't expect her to come in a good shape, cutting down to 135 for the first time in her career. So I'm going to go home here as well.
I just thought maybe Kayla Harrison, just imagine she shaves off her hair. that could really help, because she has a lot of hair.
She'd look like Alexander Volkanovski.
I was about to say, like, with all love and respect for Kayla, a bald Kayla Harrison, like, it sounds like she's a supermodel right now.
No.
Like, with her body type, bald, I would be scared.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
I would be hella scared. But
she's huge.
Yeah, but I just see 83% pick Harrison. That's crazy.
Yeah, no, I mean, I understand, because I think people, you know, maybe the casual perspective, they're looking at this fight, striker versus grappler. Oh, my God, we've seen this since UFC 1, you know? But they're both well-rounded fighters. And I would say, I would argue that Holly Holm is much more well-rounded than Kayla Harrison is. Kayla Harrison's striking is very one-dimensional. You know, she double, triple jabs to get to the clinch. And Holly Holm has great footwork, man. Like, she hasn't lost that, you know? So if she can circle and keep Kayla Harrison on the outside and, you know, poke and prod with her front kicks and her teeps and her jabs, I think Holm is going to give Harrison a lot of frustration in this matchup. And it wasn't that long ago. I mean, it was actually that long ago. It was like 8 years ago or 9 years ago. But I remember when Kayla Harrison fought a judo Olympian, and I remember when everybody thought she, or I remember when Holly Holm fought a judo Olympian, everyone thought she was going to lose, and we all saw how that played out. So, go with Holly Holm here in the underdog spot. Now, let's move on to a featherweight matchup against Calvin Kattar and Aljamain Sterling. This is a fight that I saw your video of your prediction on it, Bloodsport, and I'm really interested to talk to you about this matchup. I've been waiting to talk to you about this. You're picking Aljamain, right?
Aljislane.
Aljislane. All right. What do you think? How do you tell the people what's your prediction here?
Yeah, my prediction is, look, they're both phenomenal fighters. Aljamain making the move up to 145 is the smartest thing he did in a long time, because he is one of the best fighters in the world. He was on the pound for pound list for a reason. He's one of the greatest bantamweights of all time for a reason. But the weight is an issue for him, 135. He's a huge guy. So 145 will be a great weight class for him. He will have a good chin there as well, because the weight cut always can affect your chin, even though I believe Sugar would have still put him out. But anyways, so Calvin Kattar is a phenomenal boxer who's well-rounded, but he's not anywhere near Sterling's level on the ground. So even though he fought a guy like Moicano quite some time ago, so he fought some good grapplers, Kattar did, but he never faced someone that is that grappling dominant and aggressive like Aljamain Sterling. So I believe Aljamain Sterling will probably just fight smart, take him down, get a body triangle in, and I don't think he will finish Kattar. I will not be surprised, but Kattar is not a bomb on the ground when it comes to submission defense. So I believe Aljamain Sterling will win a decision and then like make a statement. Then one more fight, one more win, and then title shot at 145.
I would love to see it, man. I'm a huge Aljamain Sterling fan. You know, I've been following him since his debut. I remember him getting that strange submission on, I think it was Tagae Mizugaki, where he just kind of constricted him from the side. It was like a rear naked choke, but with his legs from an odd angle. It was very interesting. And, you know, I think Sterling does have a very effective style at bantamweight. I'm not sure how it's going to travel up a weight class to featherweight. I think you're right. I think the chin of his is going to be a lot better shape, 10 pounds less or 10 pounds heavier. I think he's going to have a bit more durability in all facets. He'll probably have better cardio as well. I mean, you know, but I fear for him in this fight, because I think Sterling's big tool at bantamweight was his length and his reach. I think he was able to use that to great effect against a lot of guys in that weight class. You know, particularly against somebody like Pedro Munhoz, he was able to keep those funky kicks that he has, and those, you know, popping out those jabs and his long strikes, keeping him at the end of those punches. And that was, in my opinion, Sterling's best performance as far as a striking fight goes against Munhoz. And, you know, I'd love for him to keep that kind of dominance going up a weight class. But I think he runs into a lot of problems against Calvin Kattar. Kattar is huge for 145. He's bigger than O'Malley. And, you know, he uses that boxing very well, like you mentioned. His 1-2 is very crispy. He has a great lead hook. He has a great rear uppercut that you saw against Shane Burgos. And, you know, you're right that not a lot of people have tested his grappling so much or tested his wrestling. But the people that have had a lot of trouble there. And, you know, the fight that I remember him really getting grappled more than anything was against Zabit Magomed Sharipov years ago. I think it was like 2018, 2019.
Lost.
Yeah, he did lose. But, you know, Zabit is another huge guy. You know, he's like almost 6 foot at featherweight. And he uses a lot of very tricky takedowns and a lot of very slick entries. And as much as I love Aljamain Sterling, slick and tricky are really not his tools, you know? He's a very honest fighter when it comes to the takedowns, you know? He likes to dive for the single leg. He likes to dive for the double leg. If he gets to a body lock position, he'll jump on your back. I just don't think he's going to have those opportunities afforded to him against Calvin Kattar. I think Kattar's going to be very long and keep him on the outside. If Sterling does get to a grappling position, I think it's going to be hard for him to get the takedown against Kattar. Kattar has great takedown defense. And if he does take him down, I don't see him submitting him. So I think Sterling is going to have some success in this fight for sure. I think he's going to be able to push Kattar to the fence if he does get his grappling to work. I think it's going to be in that fence position. I just feel like Cater's going to land the better punches. I think he's going to be too crispy on the feet for Sterling, and Sterling's going to end up, you know, kind of doing that like long waiting motion that he does and get caught with a two down the pipe. And I hope he doesn't get knocked out because I love Aljamain Sterling, but I think Cater's going to put some damage on him and win this fight pretty clearly, in my opinion. So we're split on the pick here. I'm That's riding really against my boy. Yeah, I love Sterling. I feel like Cater is, like, if he was fighting against somebody else at 45, I'd happily pick him. You know, if he fought somebody like, I don't know, like Josh Emmett or somebody like that, where he can kind of use that length and reach, I think Sterling has great chances at this weight class. But I think, like, out of, like, the three people who would be his hardest matchup, I think Cater's right up there. So I'm going to go with Cater here. Let's go up the card. Next one, we got Jiří Procházka coming back against Alexander Rakic against a couple of very different styles. You have one guy in Alexander Rakic who is very methodical and technical and slow-paced. He likes to use his leg kicks. He likes to use his wrestling. He likes to use his jab. He likes to win fights. And in order to win fights, he likes to win minutes of the fight rather than winning moments of the fight. Jiří Procházka, on the other hand, is an absolute wild man in every definition of the term and will frequently lose minutes of the fight in order to get one big moment. And, you know, when you're fighting somebody like Rakic, who is very technical and very defensively sound, it's kind of hard to find those moments if you're Jiří Procházka. Now, that being said, Jiří is the best in the world at finding the chaos moment. You know, he finds the serenity in chaos, if you will. You know, when people are spinning elbows and throwing wild hooks, that's where Jiří is able to find some of his best shots. It's when he fights, you know, technical guys like Alex Pereira, where he has a lot of trouble. And I kind of feel like he's going to run into that trouble here. What do you think, Bloodsport?
Yeah, I'm just trying to look what exact method I picked in my prediction video that I don't have two different picks here. Because I remember who I picked, but I don't remember. Okay, good. I just said I don't say something stupid now. But yeah, you summed that up perfectly. It's chaos against technique, against controlled striking. Like, it's, Jiří's just so unorthodox. He dips his head, throws uppercuts. Like, he comes from all different angles, but not from the angles you would expect someone to come from. While Rakic is a phenomenal technical striker, and I said it in my video, I think Rakic is a nightmare matchup for Jiří. Because Jiří has not the biggest problem. Like, he fought probably the best grappler in the light heavyweight division in Glover Teixeira. He submitted him. He didn't, he didn't look bad on the ground at all. He looked like he has a pretty slick ground game. Alexander Rakic is next to, goddammit, Reyes, the most technical striker in the division, in my opinion. And, well, Jamal Hill is also up there, but I think Rakic is just more fundamentally sound with his technique. And Rakic is not Reyes. Rakic is still, hopefully, in his prime. Still young, fresh, with a good chin, he can take a shot, and he will give a shot. Reyes is down bad, so don't come at me with, yeah, but Jiří knocked out Reyes, yeah, that doesn't count. So, I believe Rakic will keep him on the outside with beautiful techniques, with his amazing kicks, will hurt Jiří. Jiří will do mistakes, will leave openings, well, he's always open with his hands down and everything. There is a world, of course, where Procházka knocks him out 100%. Procházka can knock everyone out. He was winning against Alex Pereira. Alex Pereira was not winning. Alex Pereira just had a weird knockdown, and then that was it. So Procházka is never out of the fight. I love Procházka, but I go with Rakic by KO round number 3. Catches him with something beautiful, knocks him out, follows up one or two super necessary shots, and that's it.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the outcome of the fight is going to be, but I do see Rakic just landing more.
Oh, you have to pick an outcome.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean like, I think Rakic is going to win. I'm not sure if it's going to be by decision or by knockout. If you put a gun to my head, I'm going to say by decision, because I think Rakic is one of those guys who is not going to take a risk that he doesn't need to. You know, if he finds success with the wrestling in this matchup, I fully will and expect him, and, you know, why wouldn't he, keep going to that and not try to do anything else. You know what I mean? If I'm giving you, you know, three problems and you solve two of them, but you can't solve a third one, I'm going to keep giving you that problem. You know what I mean? And Rakic is very much of that camp. Jiří is one of those guys who finds the finish in chaotic positions, and I just don't. Rakic is not a guy who's going to give you chaos. He's going to give you nothing. He's going to, you know, he's happy to fight a boring fight, to fight a fight where he's barely outpointing you but still winning. And I think that's going to make Jiří very angry. And I think Yuri's going to be coming forward very recklessly and get caught with something or get taken down over and over. It's hard for me to pick. You know, I picked Marlon Vera against Sean O'Malley foolishly, I'll admit it, you know, but I learned a lesson in that fight where it's hard to pick somebody who you know is going to have to come back in this fight, you know, where if there's one person who takes the lead and will keep running with that lead, and the other person is a comeback fighter or somebody who needs to find a finish, it's very hard for them to get to that position sometimes. And if they can never get there, they can't get a victory, you know? So It reminds me of Blanchfield versus Fiorot, where it's like, Blanchfield, if she can get to that spot, can beat Fiorot. But what if she can't get there, you know? And she wasn't able to get there against Fiorot. Fiorot just kind of kept doing her thing. And I kind of expect the same thing to happen here, you know? Like, Jiří can absolutely chin Rakic. He's chinned many people. But he's going to have to go through a lot of phases of the fight where he's going to lose to get there. And I'm just going to side with the guy who has the more consistent approach here in Alexander Rakic. I love Jiří, and I really hope he wins because I'm not a big fan of Rakic or his style, but I think it's very effective. And against somebody like Jiří who is happy to lose parts of the fight, I think Rakic is likely to win a decision here.
Nice. All right,
let's down to the main card. Yeah, that was a good fight to call, though. I think that's going to be a very exciting one. All right, the squash match of the century here. We got Bo Nickel versus Cody Brundage.
Hard to predict.
Yeah. I think we both know, everybody knows Bo Nickel's going to win here. Or, you know, it'd be crazy if he
didn't.
Well,
it's an MMA fight. You never know.
Yeah,
you haven't seen much Bo Nickel. He has like 2-3 minutes of fight time or something. Like, he has never seen a corner in his career. He has never, ever, ever in his professional MMA career talked to his corner.
Yeah, that's crazy, right? It's all first round.
His overall
finishes.
Fight time is less than Cody Brundage had in one fight. You know?
Yeah,
I know his last fight, he's landing pretty fast, but...
Yeah, I forgot about that. That was pretty good for Brundage.
Yeah, but he's not going to slam Bo Nickel, bro. Like,
Not.
Cody Brundage is a bomb, in my opinion. He's 10-5. Like, he should be cut from the UFC. Well, he's on 2-5 winning streak, but still, if you can't win against Cedric Dumas with your wrestling isn't worth anything.
Yeah.
And Bo Nickel is a miles, centuries better wrestler. Bo Nickel, in my opinion, is even a better striker. He's more powerful.
Yes.
Like,
agreed.
Bo Nickel is going to hurt him, take him down, or knock him down, submit him in round number one.
Easy. Yes, I agree 100%. I think the real question is, how long is it going to take? Is it going to be in the first minute? Is it going to be in the second minute? The third minute?
2 minutes, 30 seconds.
Yeah, I like it. I actually put a bet on DraftKings for it to end between the second and the third minute of round one. So that's where I think it's going to go down. I think Brundage, he is, you know, I'm not going to call him... Like I don't want to disparage the guy because he is a UFC fighter and you know he has victories at the highest level.
If you want clicks, you have to be you have to say stuff like that. Trust me.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, but
say
you know,
sucks.
I think he does suck. We've talked about him on this podcast ad infinitum, ad nauseum, where he has some of the worst fight IQ you've ever seen, jumping for guillotines on Rodolfo Vieira when he's beating him on the feet. Just absolutely insane fight IQ.
Don't be silly, jump the ghillie.
Yeah. I hope he doesn't do it against Bo Nickel, but you know what? what I've noticed a lot in Brundage's fights, and what I think is going to be his biggest downfall here, is that he does not come back. Like, he cannot.
True.
If he starts to lose the fight, he gets in his own head and he completely gives up. It seems like.
And just say it. He's mentally weak.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. That's where I'm getting at, you know? Hard to say he's mentally weak because he's, you know, he's fighting.
I just want you to get the clicks. I just want you to get the headlights.
Yeah, get him the controversy. But, no, I do expect Bo Nickel to come out hot like he always does, and I expect him to chin Brundage pretty early in this fight. I don't think the grappling is going to play much of a factor here. I think Brundage is going to be scared on the feet and on the ground, and I expect him to get washed here. I think Bo Nickel's going to finish him early in the fight. If not with punches in the first couple minutes, you know, maybe he tags him up and Brundage goes for a very sloppy shot and gets either, you know, reversed or just stuffed down and beat down. Either way, I expect Bo Nickel to get it done in the first round, and I'm going to say it's going to be by knockout. It's not going to be a submission. I think he's going to knock out Cody Brundage. Brundage, when he gets tagged, tends to kind of just go belly up. You know, he was getting beat up against Jacob Malkoon and got hit in the back of the head, which, to Malkoon's, you know, like, that was such a stupid move from Malkoon. Like, you're beating the shit out of this guy. Why are you punching him in the back of the head? He was able to get that DQ victory there, but he was well on his way to quitting in that fight. So I got Bo Nickel here, and I think it's going to be pretty early. I'm going to say 2 minutes into the fight, gets a knockout. All right.
Well,
now
the
next
one is personal, so I want to hear your takes first. All
right, sounds good.
I just released my prediction video about this, so.
I didn't see it. Really, I didn't see it yet.
I just released it, like, when we started the pod, it was posted.
Okay, fair enough.
So I want to hear your take on that.
So this is a fight that I've been going back and forth with on, right? And, you know, these next four fights, I think we're going to have a lot to discuss here. But we got Charles Oliveira versus Arman Tsarukyan. Arman Tsarukyan, by all measures, seems to be the next big thing at lightweight. The guy is very well-rounded. He's got a very measured striking approach. He's got great grappling, which is really his bread and butter. And in a way, in that realm that I just described, kind of really reminds me of Ilya Topuria, in a sense, because he's that guy who we've been seeing come up through the ranks, and we've seen him, you know, pass every test that he's been given. Obviously, against Makhachev, he lost the decision, but he took Makhachev to decision, and it was a very close
fight.
In
the UFC.
Yeah, his debut. He was like 22 years old in that fight.
21.
So I think, yeah, exactly, yeah, even better. And, you know, I think a lot of people want to see that rematch, you know? I think it's the most interesting fight for Islam right now. And he has to get through the massive hurdle that is Charles Oliveira in order to get to there. Now, on both sides, I can see where these guys can win, because Arman Tsarukyan has great wrestling, great grappling. He's not going to be afraid of Charles Oliveira's ground game. He wasn't afraid of Islam Makhachev, so he's not going to be afraid of Charles Oliveira, you know? On the feet, Oliveira certainly has the power advantage. And we've seen Tsarukyan get hurt before. Against Joaquim Silva, he got hurt. Even against Gamrot, he got stunned a couple times with big overhand lefts. And Oliveira is a very heavy hitter. So I think Oliveira is going to have some success on the feet in this matchup. And I think Sarukian's going to be smart to go to the ground here. I'm really not sure who to pick. But in a fight that's so closely contended, and a fight that I can see going either way, I am going to side with the underdog here. I'm going to take Charles Oliveira. I think he catches him with a big punch and stops the hype train of Arman Tsarukyan. And although I think Arman has a better chance of dethroning Islam Makhachev, I think this is a tough matchup for him, and I'm going to go with Charles Oliveira. What do you think, Bloodsport?
Nice, nice. For me, it's I hate that fight in a way because I'm a big Arman fan, like, really, I like him a lot, and I'm a ginormous Charles fan. Like, I do not. I want to see Arman win the title, but I do not want to see Charles losing ever again.
Yeah.
So it's kind of tough. I don't want to see any one of those lose. I would just like for them to be have a no contest and both fight for the title or whatever.
Yeah. Okay, we just hug it out. You know, what are we fighting about?
yeah. But I said it since Arman did his debut. When Arman fought Islam Makhachev in his debut, I said, this guy is going to be a champion one day, 100%. 21 years old, gave Islam a run for his money, has never lost a fight in the UFC, in my opinion. I mean, against Islam, yeah, okay, it was a close fight, though, and it was his debut. I think it was even short notice and whatever, so, like, I don't count that fight. Against Mateusz Gamrot, I mean, come on, he won that fight 100%.
Yeah, I thought he won that fight, too.
He did not lose that fight. I agree with your take, he got hurt against Joaquim Silva, but Joaquim Silva was also a late replacement, he didn't prepare for him, blah, blah, blah. Arman is as well-rounded as it gets. Like, he doesn't really have a weakness. other than maybe striking defense a little bit, but that's much more of a problem for Charles Oliveira, because Charles Oliveira gets hurt in every single fight. The only fight he didn't get rocked and knocked down was against Benil, but otherwise he always gets knocked down. And the problem for Charles is Gaethje, Poirier, they did not follow him down. Chandler kind of did.
Submitted for it, yeah.
No, Chandler got knocked out by...
Oh, he did get knocked out. Yeah, good point. In the second round.
But he nearly got submitted.
He had the back.
In the RNC, but Chandler has... Well, he has a neck. He got choked up by Poirier. But anyway, Charles Oliveira's problem is he gets knocked down in nearly every fight. And Arman Sarukyan will not wait when you are knocked down. Because I always said it. Even after the Islam fight. Islam would never pass Charles' guard like that and get him an arm triangle if Charles is not rocked. But if you're rocked, you are not completely conscious. You're not laying there having your full cognitive possibilities, or whatever you want to call that. You are hurt. You are dizzy. You see three Islams, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's why Islam was able to submit him like that. And that's the whole thing. If you knock Charles down, you have to follow him down, because he will not have as good of a ground game like if he would be completely free in his brain, healthy and not rocked. If you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I really believe Arman has the potential to beat Charles Oliveira. It hurts me to do that, but I pick Arman Sarukyan. I pick him by decision though. Just because I don't want to see Charles getting knocked out, but
yeah,
I think Arman Sarukyan has the potential to finish him, but I say Arman Sarukyan just wins a smart fight and by decision, but could go any way, go either way, and I just hope that they both make it out healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I like I said, this is a fight I've gone back and forth on, because my initial reaction was, like you said, like, Sarukyan, if he hits you, like, Oliveira gets hit every fight. If he gets hit, he gets dropped. If Sarukyan drops him, he's not going to be afraid of the ground game. He's going to jump right on him. And Oliveira's been submitted before, you know? He's been finished on the ground before. He got submitted.
Anthony Pettis.
Yeah, Felder, Pettis, you know, Frankie Edgar had great success against him on the ground. Islam Akhachev, obviously, you know? So Sarukyan can definitely have success anywhere that this fight goes, you know? And you know, I might have to change my pick. I don't know. I do think that Sarukyan is gonna be a champion one day. I think it's just a matter of time. I think when he fights Islam, if and when he fights Islam again, it's gonna be an awesome fight. It's gonna be a great back and forth 5-round fight, I think. I'm afraid, because you know, I going into the Charles Oliveira Benil Dariush fight, I said the same thing. I said Dariush can drop Oliveira, and when he does drop him, he's not going to be afraid of the ground game. He's going to jump right on him. And I like Dariush's chances against Islam, because he has great hips. He's a great, you know, takedown defense. And then it didn't matter, because Charles Oliveira just fucking smoked him. And it's like, yeah, I'm tired of doubting Charles Oliveira, you know? The guy finds a way to win in these tight spots.
Just stay with Charles.
Yeah, I'm sticking with Charles. I think he's going to find a spot at some point and drop Sarukyan and, you know, put him in queer street. Maybe he'll get the finish, maybe not, but he probably will. I'm going to go with Oliveira.
We shall see.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And now we are getting BMF. To the first of the title fights, the BMF title, Justin Gaethje versus Max Holloway. I have a pretty strong opinion on this fight, so I'm going to let you go first here, Bloodsport. Who do you think on this one?
If just by you saying you have a pretty strong opinion makes me believe that we have the same opinion. Okay. So Justin Gaethje... if you remember the meme when you got trolled by reporter Justin Gaethje, Homer Simpson, CTE, whatever you want to call him, against Hiker Holloway. I am a massive Holloway fan, and I'm a big Gaethje fan as well. But I'm a ginormous Conor fan, so me and Gaethje always have the little dispute. But I really love Gaethje, especially in recent years. He was nothing but awesome. But Holloway is like deep in my heart. But I have to say, I watch both of their YouTube videos all the time in the lead up to 300. I saw them, like, we had them battles from them the whole time, kind of. It's really nice. Justin Gaethje has a phenomenal YouTube channel. And Justin Gaethje had the training camp of his life. I mean, he has Trevor Whitman, he has just an amazing gym there in Colorado. They have such a smart training plan, not game plan, what I was trying to say, fight camp plan, what I was trying to say. He's fighting at that elevation team, high elevation team or whatever, that's where he spars. He trains with Usman, he trained with Corey Sandhagen, who in my opinion is the best sparring partner you could ask for to imitate Holloway.
Yeah.
He just has the perfect camp around him. He looked so healthy in camp, the training session, like everything just looked perfect. He has his own chef. He has a woman that works for him. The whole training camp is even with him in Vegas now, that cooks for him every day. That is a cheat code. Max Holloway, he trains in his little gym in Hawaii. When I saw him sparring people, I felt like he's sparring kids. Like, honestly, his sparring partners looked like kids. He dropped them the whole time. Like, I just think Gaethje just has a much better training camp around him, and he is more powerful than Holloway. Holloway's chin is not what it used to be, in my opinion. Like, he got rocked wobbled against Yair. He got rocked wobbled even against 50-year-old Korean Zombie. Yeah. Arnold Allen rocked him a couple of times. Allen. Like,
yeah.
If those guys rock you, Gaethje will knock you down. Now, maybe not out, but at least down. And we saw what Gaethje did to Tony Ferguson. And I really think, even though it hurts, it will hurt to watch, that Gaethje will just put a clinic on him and beat him. I forgot what I picked in my prediction video, but I say beats him by TKO, either Dr. Stoppage or... you know what? I think Holloway has a lot of scar tissue by now. Doctor stoppage, round two.
I agree with pretty much everything you said, and you bring up a great point that Corey Sandhagen is a great training partner to emulate Max Holloway. Both guys are very long, very durable, have a great jab, have a great reach, and very skinny. And I think it's going to be hard to watch, I think. I think Gaethje is going to chew up Max Holloway's legs with the leg kicks. And then I think,
Yeah, problems with that against Volk as well.
Yeah, against Volkanovski. He took a lot of leg kicks against Yair Rodriguez. He took a lot of leg kicks. His answer to that in the Volkanovski fight was to, match him with punches over the top of the leg kicks, which worked to a certain extent. And against Rodriguez, his answer to the leg kicks was to take him down off of the leg kicks. He's not going to have those options against Gaethje. Sure, he can punch Gaethje over the leg kicks for sure, but Gaethje's going to take Max Holloway's punches no problem,
Love to see Holloway knocking him out.
Could you imagine? It would be a Cinderella story for me if Holloway is able to get that knockout.
That would be Leon Edwards Usman style. Like,
yeah.
That would make me go crazy, but sorry, continue.
No, you're good. I just think that Gaethje is going to rack up very dominant moments in this fight, and I think we're going to see Holloway get stopped for the first time in his career here, or finished by strikes, I should say, for the first time in his career here, as he got submitted early by Dustin Poirier. Yeah. So I'm going to go with Gaethje here, and I think the leg kicks are going to be the big factor. Holloway does not check his leg kicks. He will just take them and march forward, and Gaethje has some of the most brutal leg kicks we've ever seen in the sport. Sure, he hasn't really pulled them out in the last couple of years, but it's always there. He did them against Michael Chandler. He always has that tool in his back pocket, So I think he racks those leg kicks up early in the fight. Excuse me, Holloway's biggest tool being his... Yeah, that was nasty, right? Holloway's biggest tool being his range and his mobility is going to be taken away from him. And then in that third, fourth round, he's going to be a sitting duck, and Justin Gaethje is going to land massive punches on him. Holloway is not known for his defense. He's not known for his head movement. He's not known for his elusiveness. He takes punches. And if you're taking punches from Justin Gaethje, I don't like your chances over five rounds, I think Gaethje finds the finish in the third or fourth round. I think it's going to be, like you said, a doctor stoppage. I think he's going to have a bad cut, if not be able to walk on his leg and get a TKO from leg injury, something like that. I don't see him getting his lights put out. I don't know if he's even going to get knocked down. I think the damage is just going to wear up and wear up and wear up until the referee is forced to stop the fight, either by advice from the doctor or by way of Max Holloway not being able to walk anymore. So I got Gaethje round 3, 4, or 5 KO. There's a prop on FanDuel at like +310, I think it is. So I like that number. I'm taking Gaethje by late finish in this fight.
Nice. Right. China girl against China girl.
The Chinese queens. Zhang Weili versus Yan Xiaonan. And a fight that I think is a lot closer than the odds have it. They have Yan Xiaonan at plus 380 right now. Zhang Weili is coming back at minus 500. I love Weili. I think she's one of the best, probably the best female fighter in the world right now, pound for pound. But I think Yan Xiaonan is a very, very tough matchup for her. And I don't know why people haven't been talking about this fight. You know, I think this fight's kind of gone under the radar a little bit on this card. You know, obviously it's easy too because there's so many amazing fights on this card. But I think Weili has a lot of tools that can give Xiaonan trouble, primarily the grappling and the wrestling. And I think Xiaonan can give Weili a lot of trouble with the striking. I think her defensive movement, her footwork is, you know, second to none in this weight class. She's very light on her feet, and she knows when to stop, to plant, to throw her 3-2 or to throw her leg kicks. And I could see her racking up a lot of success here against Weili. That being said, Weili is the best in the world for a reason, and she has so many tools to win the fight. And it seems like in her last fight against Amanda Lemos, she kind of shook off what I thought was her biggest downfall her whole career. Her whole career, it seemed like she wanted to beat you where you were good at. She wrestled Carla Esparza. She striked with Rose Namajunas. She striked with Ioane and Jacek. And in that last fight against Lemos, I feel like she might have turned a corner and been like, fuck that. I'm just going to beat the shit out of this girl. And that's what she did. She beat her like 50-42. Like, it was bad. It was one of the most one-sided title fights we've ever seen. So that's obviously Weili is in her prime right now. And Yan Xiaonan coming off of that knockout over Jessica Andrade, you could argue that she's in her prime as well. So I think we're in for a very exciting, very close fight here. What do you think, Bloodsport? Who do you got in this one?
Yeah, I think you summed it up pretty nicely. I really think this is neat. Yeah, I don't want to call it an easy pick because it's kind of disrespectful, because Yan Xiaonan is a really good striker and a really like fighting style and everything. But Zhang Weili, in my opinion, is the pound for pound number one in women's MMA. She has the potential to be the greatest woman of female fighter of all time. She has all the tools. I see no weaknesses in her game. She only lost one fight against Rose. She didn't lose the second one against Rose, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And that one was by a weird little head kick. Can always happen. You can always get caught. Also, in this fight, she can get caught. But I do believe that Zhang Weili will just put a clinic on Yan Xiaonan. I mean, you don't lose to Marina Rodriguez and get knocked out by Carla Esparza and then win against Zhang Weili. I just don't think that. So Zhang Weili will just dominate her, kind of like she did... like she did Lemos. I think she will use a lot of her grappling and finish her by TKO knockout in round number 4.
I like the pick. I am going to side with Weili as well. I think it's going to be by decision, though. I think Yan Xiaonan is very durable. She was able to get finished by Carla Esparza, like you said, but it was more so that she couldn't get out of the position. You know, Weili can definitely put you in positions you can't get out of as well, so she might be able to find the finish. But I think Weili is going to have her hands full with this fight more than people think. And I think she's going to win a close but clear decision, probably 48-47 with a 49-46 spliced in there. So we both got Weili in the co-main. Now, let's get down to the main event. This is another fight that I think a lot of people are overlooking or maybe, you know, just writing
split
off.
Split as well.
Yeah, really? What, on Tapology or...?
Well, it's 71-29, but I think off Topology, if you talk to people, it's kind of split.
Yeah,
Catholics, I think we'll just say Pereira just because that's all they know. But
yeah, I think the people that are in the know are giving Jamal Hill a much better chance than the widespread audiences. I understand picking Pereira, you know, outright because of how great he's been in the striking against everybody in the sport. The only time he ever showed any weakness was when he got knocked out against Israel Adesanya. So I get it. You know what I mean? But I feel like Jamal Hill is that guy, man. I don't know. I've been watching him since his Contender Series fight, and it seems like every time he hits people, he does immense damage on them. You know, like I remember when he fought Jimmy Crute. You know, of course Jimmy Crute's not to the level of Alex Pereira, but he only hit him like 4 times, and you see Crute's face, insane. Like, his eye was poking out to this way, he had this big red mark over his face, and he got hit like 5-6 times in that fight. So Jamal Hill has very heavy hands, and if he can catch, if he can find your chin, I think he has a great chance of putting you out, you know? Obviously, he couldn't put out Glover Teixeira. He fought him for five rounds, but he showed a complete MMA game in that fight. He took him down. He beat him on the ground. He beat him on the feet. He landed head kicks. He landed leg kicks. He landed punches. I think Hill is a little bit defensively irresponsible. I think he leaves his chin out a little too much. He leaves his hands down a little too much for my liking against somebody that's such a sharpshooter like Pereira. But I would say the same thing about Pereira. Pereira leaves his chin out on a platter as well. He got hit a lot against Jan Blachowicz. He got hit a lot against Adesanya. He got knocked out. So I like Pereira's chances here, man. I think if Pereira can catch him in the chin, I think he can knock him out. I think either way this fight's going to end in a knockout, but I like Jamal Hill's chances. What do you think, Bloodsport?
Yep. Yeah, I agree. If I try to sum it up, I believe Jamal Hill is majorly underrated. His striking is absolutely phenomenal. His hack is absolutely beautiful. Yeah, he didn't take Glover out, but he had him on skates like 10 times. Glover was just a zombie. Plus, Glover had the threat of the takedown the whole time, which Alex Pereira will not pose. I think if they go to the ground, Jamal Hill will probably have a pretty dominant way on the ground against Pereira, even though Pereira is a brown belt. I don't know who gave him that, but
yeah, we gotta check this, brother.
we have to check this brown belt. Who gave this?
Yeah.
Pereira is a phenomenal fighter. Pereira can knock everyone out. Like, that's a fight where, like, just because I pick side A doesn't mean that side B can't win. You know what I mean? Like, Pereira can knock everyone out. But the problem is, Pereira, name me one fight other than the fight his debut. Maybe one fight where he was dominating the fight, where he was winning the fight the whole time and like never got hurt. He always gets hurt and he's always losing the fight. Against Izzy, was losing the fight when he finished Izzy. In the second time against Izzy, when he got knocked out, he was actually on the better side. He looked much better than in the first one, but against Jan Blachowicz, he was not winning the fight the whole time. Like, Jan Blachowicz catched him with some nice shots. Against Yiri. Yiri was winning the whole fight against Pereira. Yiri even had him rocked right, like 10 seconds before Pereira catched him with a left hook. So if Jamal stays smart, doesn't rush like Yiri did, and just runs at him, I think Jamal Hill will pick him apart from the outside and knock him out. I don't know what I predicted in the video which round, but I will say round 2. And new/still, because you never lost the belt.
Yeah, I think round 2 as well. I think first round is going to be a good round for Pereira. I think the leg kicks are going to be a big factor for him in this fight.
Especially if he goes longer.
Yeah, but I do think that Hill eventually is going to find the chin. And I've seen Pereira get knocked out, man. I've seen him get knocked out against Adesanya. I saw him get knocked out in kickboxing, too. It's not like he has some indestructible chin. You know what
That's
I mean?
That's the thing.
Yeah, somebody like Teixeira has a very strong chin, and Jamal Hill wasn't able to put him away, sure, but Jamal Hill knocked out everybody else
Everyone.
He fought.
Yeah.
Sweet
dreams, yeah.
Yeah, they don't call him that for no reason.
He had a full training camp of Pereira. Like, Glover was not short notice, but the Glover fight was not...
Was it a short notice?
No, yeah, kind of. The thing was that Glover was scheduled to fight Yiri at UFC 280-something in December of 2022. Then Yiri tore his Terry's shoulder or hurt his shoulder. Then Glover was offered Ankalaev, I believe. Glover didn't want that. Then Ankalaev fought the Yambrochovich for the interim belt. No, for the real belt. It was a draw. And then the night of 280, whatever it was. No, it was 282. On the night of 282, they booked it for 283 in January.
Yeah.
Because I remember I was there at 283, so it was 282 in December. That's when Paddy Pimblett lost his fight against Jared Gordon, just to mention that.
Oh, yeah.
so, yeah, you had like 1 month to prepare, whilst Glover had a training camp already for Yiri, you know what I mean, for a striker. So I think that plays kind of a factor, but I just hope Jamal comes back healthy from the injury, because that's also something that we can't just not mention. Like,
yeah,
Achilles tear close to 1 year ago, like...
That's a rough
injury. You never know. Yeah, you never know.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I think that Achilles tear might be a big factor in this fight. But I can't shake the feeling of seeing Jamal Hill catching Pereira with a right straight. You know, I think it's going to be a 3-2 down the straight. Maybe a head kick in there as well. And he fights from both stances. So even if Pereira is able to get those leg kicks off, which I think is going to be his biggest tool in this fight, is the leg kicks, Jamal can just switch the stance on him and, you know, catch him from the other side. So I like Jamal in this fight, man. I think at the underdog spot, I love it. I think he's going to get the knockout in the first three rounds, but probably in the second. I think the second is where it's going to go down. All right.
Nice.
Let's go down our betting slip for the card. Each of our betting slips. If you were going to bet on this fight, or I don't know if you plan on betting this fight card or not.
I stopped betting since Mike Malott lost to Neil Magny and ruined my whole betting account. I stopped. I was like,
that's fair. That one got me too.
I'm thinking about if I should for this card because it's such a fun card. But what I have to say to the betting card, why I stopped, is it kills the fun of the fight for me, because I'm majorly interested in every fight anyways. It's not like that's the only reason I watch the fight. And the Mike Malott Neil Magny fight kind of woke me up, because normally I would cheer. I would be like, oh my god, Neil Magny comeback crazy. Oh my god, that's amazing. Yeah. I wanted to kill someone.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I lost so much money. I was so angry. And I want to enjoy the fights.
Yeah,
I don't want to be
that.
Mad at someone that I don't even hate.
Yeah.
And be mad at both fighters, kind of.
Yeah.
Even though it was a fun little upset, which should actually be cheerful.
A fun comeback. Yeah.
Yeah. So it kills my it kills the fun of the fight, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So that's why I kind of stopped betting. But you never know. Maybe I start again.
Fair enough. Well, if you were going to... What would your picks be for the card if you were going to bet?
I would probably put a parlay on Jamal Hill, Zhang Weili. You have to put Weili in a parlay because it's such a big favorite. Zhang Weili and Max Holloway. Justin Gaethje. Justin Gaethje's. I will put a three-leg parlay there because it's a nice Jamal Hill lot for the three main fights. And I would definitely not bet on... I will probably put some fun money on Brundage just for shits and giggles. Brundage inside the distance. Why not? Great odds. A parlay with Rakic could be pretty good, even though it's -130. Like, Rakic and Sterling together, why not? They're both slight favorites. And for a single bet, I would put some... Diego Lopez, Aljamain Sterling, and Rakic in a parlay. Three slight favorites that, in my opinion, will win. Mm-hmm. And then put some nice little money on Holly Holm for a single bet.
Yeah.
That's it.
I like it. I'm going Figueiredo. I'm going to go Jalen Turner by knockout. I'm going to stay away from the Lopez fight. I'm going to put a solo bet on Holly Holm, like we said. I'm going to throw Calvin Kattar in my parlay, and I'm going to put Justin Gaethje in there as well. So in a four-pick parlay, I got Gaethje, I got Kattar, I got Turner, and Figueiredo. And then I like the underdog spot for Jamal Hill. I like the underdog spot for Kattar, like I mentioned, and for Holly Holm. So I'll probably do a round robin of those three picks. Any two of those hit, you make some money, you know?
Nice.
But overall, it's a really great card. A lot to talk about, and I'm happy to have you on here again, Bloodsport. It's been a real pleasure, my man.
Thank you for joining.
Yeah, man. So,
thanks for inviting me. I love it.
Yeah, man, of course. Anytime, man. So this is going to be a great card, and I hope you guys enjoyed as much as we enjoyed talking about it. There's a lot of money to be made and some interesting underdog spots, some interesting props. But more than anything, it's going to be a really fun fight card to just watch. So thank you so much for listening. And peace out, y'all. Take it easy. Let's get it. We'll be back for UFC 400. All right. Take it easy, y'all. Perfect.